Okay, so we are holding we're holding just past the middle of the Almud on Nun Teh Amud Aleph. The line begins Shana Shama. Okay, so the last thing we discussed is the question. We know that Goyim have one of their Sheva Mitzvahs is Avim and Achai. They're not allowed to eat a limb from a living animal. We had Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel said they also have a mitzvah not to eat blood from a living animal, whereas the Chachamim disagreed with that. And we pointed out that the basis for the Machloikas is that you have the Torah mentions Basa b'napshe domo le'sichelu as part of what Hashem tells Noah after the Mabul, and later on in the Torah you have the Eivishta addresses to the Jewish people and says that don't eat blood. Ki adom hu anefesh. We learn from there Eivim minachai and Dam minachai.
When did he say that?
That's after Matan Torah. It's in Chumash Devarim. It's in Parashas Re.
So why couldn't it apply to?
That's the question. Lama li lemichtav livnei noyach, v'lama li lemishni b'sinai. Why does this concept of Eivim minachai, or according to Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, Dam minachai nalati? Why does this concept of Eivim minachai, and according to Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, Dam minachai, why does it have to be said the first time for Bnei Noyach, and then later on repeated at Har Sinai for the Jewish people?
What kind of question is
it? Well, why should it have to be repeated?
Because
I mean, the Jewish the Jewish people are included in Bnei Noach. You're not going to say that once something was also to Bnei Noach, you're not going to say that once the Torah is given to the Jewish people, we're going down a level and we're going to say that something that was also to them is mutar to us. We had that concept yesterday. The Gemara used the expression, how do you have something that's mutar for Jewish people and also for goyim? So why should it happen
for them? It's also for us, and therefore
it shouldn't have to be repeated. Right. The answer is Kidur Rabbi Yisrael ben Chanina. The reason is like what Rabbi Yisrael ben Chanina says. Dama Rabbi Yisrael ben Chanina, Kol mitzvah shenemer l'bnei Noach v'nishnis v'sinai. The rule is as follows: any mitzvah that was first said to Bnei Noach before Matan Torah, and then it was repeated at Har Sinai, it means l'zevel l'zenemer. The Torah wants to tell us that is addressed to both. It's addressed to Jews and it's addressed to Bnei Noach, to goyim. On the other hand, Nemra l'bnei Noach v'loy nishnis v'sinai. But if the mitzvah is said the first time to Bnei Noach and then not repeated at Har Sinai, then it means Yisrael Nemer of Eloi Bnei Noach. Then it means that it's given only to the Jewish people, not to Bnei Noach. But Anu, Ein Lanu, if it's said originally before Matan Torah, it says earlier in the Torah, in Parashat Chumash Bereishis, for example, it says a certain mitzvah. And then later on, it does not repeat it after Matan Torah. Again, it can't logically mean, therefore, that you're going to say it only applies to Bnei Noach and does not apply to Jews, because there's no logic to say that something should be obligatory on Goyim and not on us, or that it has to be the other way around. It has to be, therefore, it's said only the one time to say that it's applicable to us, Jewish people, but not to them. And what is a case of such a mitzvah? The only example we can find of such a mitzvah that's said before Matan Torah and then not repeated later in the Torah is the mitzvah of not eating the Gidah Nasha, and only according to Rabbi Yehuda. Namely, in Chulin, the Gemara has machloikas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chacham. Is it now, we have the mitzvah of Gidah Nasha is given in the Torah, in Parashas Vayishlach, after the story of Yaakov fighting with the Malach over there. So it says, Alkein lo yorchul ben Yisrael of Gidah Nasha. So the question is, does that mean at that point in history, a new mitzvah was given to the descendants of Yaakov, which who at that point are still considered Bnei Noach?
And Bnei Yisrael.
No, but fine, okay. So but La Halacha, they're still considered Bnei Noach at that point. Remember, this is before the Torah was given. And besides that, also, Rabbeinu Yonah goes further and says that, yes, historically, the thing happened with Bnei Yisrael, but it was actually meant to be, on the face of it, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it was meant to be addressed to all the nations of the world. But wait, Rabbi Yehuda says, therefore, so okay, so the din existed before Matan Torah as well. On that basis, Rabbi Yehuda says also, for example, that it would apply to a treifa animal, whereas the Chachamim disagree. The Chachamim say over there that no, the mitzvah was given after Matan Torah, like most of the other mitzvahs.
Gidanosha.
After. Elamai, the Torah writes it in Parashas Vayishlach because the Eivishta told Moshe to write it in the context where the story happened. After we tell the story that happened, Yaakov and the Malach, so Hashem told Moshe to stick in over there the pasuk that therefore Bnei Yisrael don't eat the Gidah Nasha. That's also
it was said by the Eivishta.
Meaning, in other words, so according to the Yehuda, it was also to them before Matan Torah, and according to the Chachamim, not.
What's the right for this?
Well, this is the only example, according to Rabbi Yehuda, where we have a mitzvah that was applicable, according to Rabbi Yehuda, before Matan Torah, but it's never again repeated in the Torah. Now, Rabbi Yehuda is not going to say on that basis that Gid Anasha applies to all the nations of the world now. Therefore, what must it mean? Because up until Matan Torah, it was meant to be applicable to at least some Bnei Noach, namely at least the descendants of Yaakov, and maybe more generally the nations of the world, like Rabbeinu Yonah says. But after Matan Torah, because it wasn't repeated again, then it changed. Now, from now on, Bnei Noach are allowed in it, and Bnei Yisrael are also in it. But that would be the only example that we could find.
And according to one
according to the Chachamim, according to the Chachamim, you don't even have that, because according to the Chachamim, it was given after Matan Torah. It's just written in Parashas Vayishlach instead of being written as a regular mitzvah. Where the Chachamim have
arrived for this?
The Chachamim, that's how the Chachamim learned. That's how the Chachamim learned. The Rambam, in fact, says as a general thing, B'chlal, the Rambam
says, you know, according to my understanding, to say,
you would expect it to say, Vayyadav Hashem Moshe Leim Odoni Gid Anasha, but okay, it wasn't. But the Rambam actually writes over there in Pirush HaMishnayos that B'chlal, you know, we're going to have in our sugya over here, we're going to mention a number of mitzvahs that were given before Matan Torah. Bris Milah is one of them, a couple of others.
Yeah.
The Rambam says that according to the Chachamim, and the Halacha is like them, the point is we don't keep Bris Milah, for example, because the Eivishta gave it to Avraham Avinu. We keep Bris Milah because the Eivishta gave it to us by Matan Torah and told us, do Bris Milah. Historically, it goes back to Avraham Avinu, but that we do it nowadays is not because of the Tzibur to Avraham Avinu, but because it was re-given to the Jewish people at Har Sinai.
So Chachamim says all the mitzvahs were really spoken after, but it was
No. For example, Bris Milah was given to Avraham, but then it was repeated at Har Sinai, and therefore, fine, so let's analyze that. So we're saying any mitzvah that was originally given to Bnei Noach and then repeated at Har Sinai, so it means it's addressed to both. So for example, Avraham Achai is given in Parshas Noach, and it's repeated later on in Parshas Re'eh, and therefore it's applicable to both. The question is, Adraba, why should we argue that way? We should say, on the contrary, since it was repeated at Har Sinai, evidently, Yisrael Nemer of Halel of Bnei Noach. L'chora, wouldn't that mean that it was meant to be addressed only to the Jewish people and not to Bnei Noach?
Why should you say this?
Because you would think, once it's given again at Har Sinai, then it means. So the Eivishta is taking it away from the other nations and saying, from now on, it's only for you.
No, but wait a minute. That is not logical. How the other nations are going to know that it was taken away from them? Are they going to know?
Their Nevi'im will tell them. Let's say, for example, Bilam could tell them. I don't know. I mean, we actually had, first of all, before Matan Torah, they just went around shopping around the Torah to all the nations, right? And they all turned it down. So at that point, their Nevi'im or whatever could have told them, okay, so the Eivishta is saying, from now on, these mitzvahs don't apply to you anymore. Okay. The answer is no. Given that we have the concept of the Issur of Avodah Zarah, which is told at Har Sinai, it's in the Aseret HaDibros, and it's in a number of places in the Torah, and we find that Goyim are punishable for it, because we find that the seven nations of Canaan were punished for their Avodah Zarah and kicked out of Eretz Israel.
And it was not said before?
No, it was. That's the point. It was said by Tzav Hashem Elokim, the Pasuk by Tzav Hashem Elokim that we learned. So therefore, in other words, so there you have an example of a mitzvah that was previously said and repeated at Har Sinai. That proves that such a mitzvah must be addressed to both Bnei Noach and Bnei Yisrael. Otherwise, how can the seven nations of Canaan be punished for their Avodah Zarah and kicked out of Eretz Yisrael?
They were punished after Matan Torah, right?
Yeah, after 4 years after Matan Torah, right? So you came into Eretz Yisrael. Okay. What about, we said, if a mitzvah is given to Bnei Noach and not repeated at Har Sinai? We said, the Yisrael member of Loyal Bnei Noach, it means such a mitzvah is only addressed to the Jewish people and not to Bnei Noach. So the question is, Adarabba, shouldn't we argue the other way around? Since it's not repeated at Har Sinai, we should assume Bnei Noach member of Loyal Yisrael. Maybe it's only meant to be addressed to Bnei Noach, not to Jews. The answer is, like as the Svara that we said before, Lekha Midam, the Yisrael Shari, Loyal Kachavim, also Bnei Noach. You don't have such a thing that's mutter to Jews and also to Goyim. So there's no way you can have that something should be also, you can have Gid Anasha, for example. There's no way that you could say that Gid Anasha should be also to Goyim and mutter to Jewish people. There's no logic in it. The Torah is not coming to, the Matan Torah is not coming to take away mitzvahs from us. It's coming to add extra kedusha to us. So therefore, it has to be whatever was applicable to us before. So that it doesn't say it again, precisely to demonstrate that it doesn't apply to the Goyim anymore. And as we discussed yesterday, Tosfos mentions over here, you have, for example, a Jew has a mitzvah to keep Shabbos, and a Goy is also too. But on the other hand, the what it is It's not that a yid is mutter to keep Shabbos. A yid has a mitzvah to keep Shabbos. So a yid has a mitzvah to keep Shabbos, and a goy is also to do that. Here we're talking about there should be something which is mutter, that a Jew is allowed to do something, and a goy is also that you don't have to defend. Killing ubrim, we said, for example, the other day, as far as killing fetuses the other day, performing abortions or whatever, we said it's a goy is chayiv misa for it, a yid is not chayiv misa, but it's still also to him. We're not saying it's something mutter. Yeah.
So that's already a beginning of saying the plot is complete.
No, but that's what we're saying. There's no such thing.
No,
we're not saying it's mutter. We're saying a yid is not chayav mitzvah for it. We're not saying that it's mutter. A yid is not allowed to perform abortions except Tosafot says, okay, if you're doing it to save the mother's life, actually Tosafot says maybe in that case a goy would be allowed to. Maybe a goy would be allowed to also in that case. Tosafot says, okay, anyway. So the question is, Veloy, so you're telling me not? You have no exception where something is also to, where you have no case where something is also to a goy and mutter to a yid? What about the matter of Yifas Toyar? We said before, a couple of blocks ago, we know that the Torah is matter Yifas Toyar to a yid, and even if she was somebody's wife beforehand. Whereas to a goy, we said the other day that if a goy designated a shifcha for his Eved Knani, and then he was mezana with her, which is the equivalent of a Yifas Toyar, because he's done it with a couple, then Neregala, he can be executed for it.
They don't have an institute of marriage, right?
No, we're talking about, in other words, this guy. No, among goyim themselves, there is such a thing as marriage, as Eshesh Sis, for example. But here we're talking about. That's why you have the concept of Eshesh Sis. But here we're talking something else. Here we're talking about a goy has an eved and a shifcha. He designated this shifcha is designated for this particular eved. She's going to be his exclusive, let's say, it's not wife, really, because Avodim and Shvachas don't have marriage, but fine. Let's say it's a girlfriend, and then this goy, the master, goes in and is not with her. He's Chayiv Misa. Rashi said the other day it's a matter of Gezel. The Rambam learns that it's a matter of Eshes Ish, that's a matter of Arayas. Whatever the case, there you have Yifas Toya, the equivalent of that, Yifas Toya, would be Moshe for a yid.
Where is Eshes Ish in going?
Because you have, for example, a goy is also. So we said, V'davach V'ishtoy. V'davach V'ishtoy, V'hoi L'vasa.
Yeah. This is the Chayiv Misa.
Yeah. Okay. The answer is, that's different. The reason why the concept of Yifas Toyah does not apply to Goyim, and therefore this Goy would be Chayiv Misa, is because of a technicality, because Goyim are not capable of conquering in a way that's valid Lahalah. So Rashi says, in other words, the concept of conquest being something valid, and you take title for that land, only belongs to the Jewish people, and that's Yifas Toyah takes place in battle. Some Achronim talk about what do you mean. We find, for example, Amun and Moav taught over Sichon, and we say that Sichon conquered land from Amun and Moav, and it became his, and therefore the Jewish people are able to conquer it from him. So they have a couple of, the Mefarshim talk about a couple of different possibilities. Maybe
but that's
what
not conquering.
It is conquering.
If it was made for the Jewish people to later come.
No, but that's the point is that Sichon's conquest of it, Lechora, is considered valid in halacha, such that we could take it away from
exactly.
No, but fine. The point is, during those years when Sichon owned it, then Lechora, he owned it as full conquest. So they give a couple of different answers. One of them is what the Gemara means over here is, yes, a goy has the ability to conquer the land, but he doesn't have the ability to conquer that he owns the bodies of the people. A yid, we learned back in Yeramas, for example, a yid, when he owns an Eved Knani or a Shifchas Knanis, he owns their body. A goy technically only owns their malacha, the fact that they're going to work for him. So therefore, that could be what the Gemara means over here. Or they talk about maybe by Sichon and whatever and other such things. Maybe it means, practically speaking, it wasn't Sichon's possession. Not that the Torah actually says that he's considered the legal owner of the land, but practically speaking, it's out of the hands of Amon and Moav, and therefore, when we fight against him and take it, we're not taking it from them, and therefore it's fine.
Are you saying that if not for this point that they're not the conquest, then we would learn from Yid?
Then you
would also
say, exactly,
by the Goy. We will learn from Yid back to Goy.
Yes, because you couldn't say that.
I will take all the mitzvahs back to the Goy.
No, not all.
Let's take all the mitzvahs.
Yeah, Yaakov. What we're saying is, you have something, Yifas Toyah, which ordinarily would be Osir, but the Torah is master it to a Yid. If Goyim were able to do Kibush in a way that would be valid up the Halacha, then we would say that, yes, Yifas Toyah would be Mutter to Goyim as well. If they conquer and take captives and whatever, and one of them is Yifas Toyah, or like this, the master is going to take his Shifta or whatever, he wouldn't be Chayiv Misa for it. Just so, yeah, that's
for Goyim will learn from the Yid in this mitzvah, if not this problem.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, don't we have to test all the other mitzvahs?
Hold on. We're talking about something that's mutter to a yid, not that's a mitzvah for a yid. It's not a mitzvah for a yid to do Yifas Toyah, it's mutter for him. Yeah. Okay. What about stealing less than a shavah prota? Now, the Rama, the Yad Rama, explains that our Gemara is taking the view, unlike a Gemara that we learned on this topic a couple of days ago, there the Gemara took the view that a Yid is also to steal less than a Shavuot Prota, just that, also Midoraita, just that he, just that the other Yid is Moichel on it, therefore there's no mitzvah of returning it. Here the Gemara is taking the view, here the Gemara apparently is taking the view that a Yid is taka mutter, is taka mutter to steal less than a Shavuot Prota, where the Goy would be killed for it. The answer is Hasan Bashum B'nei Mechilinu. Again, there it's a technicality. Technically, a Jew is not allowed to steal less than a Shavuot Prota, but because a Yid has Rachmanos, therefore it's not considered Gezel. A Goy does not have that kind of Rachmanos, therefore it remains Gezel. We're not saying it's something mutter to a Yid and also to a Goy. We're saying it's something also to a Yid, just the other Yid ends up being Moichel. It's interesting, by the way, the Gemara has in a couple of other places.
It's not Meichel, it is Gezel.
It would be, but we assume that a Yid is Meichel, because Yid is Ner Rachmanos. It's interesting, there's a couple of places where the Gemara uses the expression in this connection, Ben Noyach Nerag Al Pachas Meshavah Prota, that a Ben Noyach could be executed stealing less than a Shavah Prota, because that's what comes out of this. If a Goy steals less than a Shavah Prota from another Goy, then he's going to be Chayav Misa. So it's interesting, by the way, that there used to be a Yiddish expression, a Yiddish slang expression for a miser, a cheap person, they used to call him a Ben Noyach. On the basis of that, Nerag Al Pachas Meshavah Prota, will kill himself over that he's losing less than a Shavah Prota. So they nicknamed such a guy Ben Noyach. Okay.
Why can't you say that? It implies it's a case of the Tammuz is a mitzvah, or is any kind of
no, I'm over Nifas Tayer, it's by Mechamas Rishur Sosa. The Mechamas Rishur Sosa, because of Medabah, the first draft, the young man of Parliament. To Mechamas Rishur Sosa, I don't know, but whatever. They're at least Shayach to Mechamas Mitzvah or Mechamas Chayvah, sure, they're allowed to defend themselves.
Probably Chassidus has some as more of the things.
That may be, okay. All right. Onward. We said, Kol mitzvah shenemer lo b'nei noyach v'nishnas v'sinai. We said, any mitzvah that was said to b'nei noyach originally and then repeated at Harsinai, lo zev lo zen nemra. So we say it's meant to be addressed to both b'nei noyach and Jews. So let's look and see if we can find any exceptions. What about the mitzvah of Bris Mila, which is originally said to B'nai Noach, namely to Avraham, before Matan Torah, who again is still considered a Ben Noach, D'chtei Ba'ata as Brisi Tishmer, the Eibishter tells Avraham, you should keep my Bris, V'nishnes V'sinai, and is repeated after Har Sinai, it's repeated in Parashas Tazria, V'yom HaShmini Yimo, that on the eighth day you should circumcise, and yet L'Yisrael Nemer of Eloi L'Bnei Noach, and yet the mitzvah of Mila is addressed only to Jews and not to Goyim. Now, we did learn yesterday, we learned that Gemara had mentioned that the Sheva Mitzvah Ben Noach only include things that the Goyim are not allowed to do. We don't include things that the Goyim are told to do. For example, that's why we said not keeping Shabbos is not considered one of their Sheva Mitzvahs, because the mitzvah is get up and do work rather than don't do something. So why are we mentioning over here Brit Mila? So the question is, so why is the Gemara taking it as a grant? Why is the Gemara taking it for granted that they're not Chayiv and Mila, if you could just say they are Chayiv and Mila, it's just not considered one of their Sheva Mitzvahs.
So you're saying Aser, there is a clause Aser not negate to go altogether.
Right. So there's a couple of answers, one of them being the Marshal talks about since lack of Mila involves Kores, as it says in the Psukim over there, you could argue that in that sense it's like a loy. The Marshal, as I think it is, or somebody talks about a different idea that we know that Mila is b'chlal not applicable to Goy. If a Beis Din doesn't require them to do it, if a Goy does a Bris Mila on a Yid, it's considered Pasul, as we'll learn in the Sech Tavad Azara, a Goy himself, even if he's circumcised, is still considered an Oral, so the b'chlal not Shayach there. So therefore, the Gemara understands that they have no Shayach there. So the question is, why not? It's said before Matan Torah, it's repeated after Matan Torah. The answer is, Ahu l'mishri Shabbos u'da'asa. L'mishrol nemer v'lo l'bnei Noach. L'chora we see it said to the Jewish people and not to b'nei Noach. The answer is, Ahu l'mishri Shabbos u'da'asa. Fine, but that repetition in the Torah later on of Vayim HaShmini Yimo is not to teach us again about the din of Bris Mila. It's to teach us the detail that you're allowed to, that the Bris Mila on the eighth day takes place even on Shabbos. So therefore, it can still be considered a mitzvah that was only said originally to B'nai Noach and not repeated after Matan Torah. And therefore, according to our rule before, it's only for Israel. It's only for the Jewish people. Hey, what about the Arik?
Let them do what? The special mitzvah of the Avraham Avinu.
No,
you have extension.
We're saying. We said the rule before that if it's said only once in the Torah, it means it's only for the Jewish people, not for Bnei Noach. So here it's said only once. It's said again in Parashas Tazria. It's not said to say there's a mitzvah of Bris Mila. It's telling us as far as the Bris Mila that I previously told you about, which now is addressed only to you Jewish people, that you can do even on Shabbat. Okay, what about the period of Rivia? What about the mitzvah of Pruvu? Shenemer l'Bnei Noach. It's originally said to Bnei Noach. The Eved should tell Noach, you be fruitful. will multiply. V'nishnis v'sinai, and it's repeated after Matan Torah. I mean, the Eibishter tells Moshe, Leichem er lahem, shuvu lachem la'alechem, go tell them, return to your tent. And your tent means your wife. Means go be fruitful and multiply. Go be with your wife. And we say, and we say that the mitzvah of Peru who only applies to the Jewish people and does not apply to Bnei Noach.
So that goes against the rule.
Mind you, by the way, the Shiltis, actually, from Rav Achoy Goyen, one of the early Goyenim, talks about, he wants to say, unlike what our Gemara is saying over here, that Peru who does apply to Goyim, but the later Goyenim and Rishonim and who and all talk about that, say what he means is maybe not the technical mitzvah of Peru Ru, but rather sort of the negative side of it. Like the Torah Brah L'Shevet Yitzara, that you do have a mitzvah to not just be unmarried and not have children. You have a mitzvah to populate the world. But the actual technical mitzvah of Peru Ru, the kind where you have to have one boy and one girl.
So they have to have children, but for example,
it also includes the idea, let's say, they don't necessarily have to be married to fulfill it, where the yid does. Yeah, okay.
So the answer is,
fine, but that pasuk, leichem er lahem, shuvu lachem la'alechem, is not coming to teach us the actual mitzvah of Peru. Again, it's coming to teach us a detail about dini. Namely, we have a general concept in halacha, that if it was in Rambam Shlosha Pratim a day or two ago, that if you have a Beis Din voted to after something, even if they put a time limit on it, nevertheless, even when the time limit expires, or even when the reason expires or whatever, you need another Beis Din to be matir. You don't just say it automatically expires. Therefore, for example, we have the concept, let's say, the second day of Yom Tov Sheni Shogolius. Even though technically nowadays it shouldn't be needed, because we know Kavir Diyarcha, we know when Rosh Chodesh is, and
Rosh Hashanah.
Well, Rosh Hashanah is a different matter. That's a different matter. But we're talking about the other Yom Tov. But technically, we shouldn't need it. Nevertheless, Dovah Shem Minyan, Sarach Minyan Acha La'atira, and there was never any Minyan Acha to take away the second day of Yom Tov, and therefore it remains. So in other words, in this case, the Eibishter told them before Matan Torah, you have to stay away from your wives. Al Tigshu Al Isha. If it hadn't been for the Eibishter saying, Leichem er lahem, shuvu lachem la'alechem, if it hadn't been for the Eibishter telling Moshe, tell them you can return to your tents, meaning return to your wife, they would remain aser. So we learn that din from this pasuk, not the actual mitzvah of Peru.
It would remain aser
for a man and his wife to be together. Because it would be, the Eibishter would have said before Matan Torah, al tigshu al isha, and even though it was l'shloshes yamim, if you don't have an explicit statement afterwards that it's mutter again, then it would have remained aser. But that's where we learn this concept in halacha from. Dovah Shem Minyan, Sarach Minyan Achalat Yireh. We learn from that.
They need a tzivui to go out
and to resume marital relations. Yeah, that would be
that.
That's the idea. Yeah.
Well, although it was said for so many days, you have to make another statement.
You still have to make.
Because
the logic is that a Beis Din officially said that it's author. So therefore,
for 30 days, not forever.
No, it doesn't matter. Nevertheless, you still need. Okay, so the question is, Yehochi, if you're going to go like that, Chod v'chodah nami, then every mitzvah you could say like that, name a mishum milta isni. You could say, fine, it's any mitzvah. Let's say, for example, Avodah Zorah, it's mentioned again in order to mention details about it. Gilui Arayis, it's mentioned, it's repeated again to tell us the different ancient. You could say that about every mitzvah then. You could say that when it's repeated, it's said to Bnei Noach, let's say Arayis or Avodah Zorah or whatever, and it's repeated after Matan Torah. It's not to teach us that it's obligatory on Bnei Noach, it's only that the Eibishter is giving an extra detail that applies to Jews. And you could say, therefore, it only applies to Jews. The answer is hachikama. No, but what we mean is as follows. As hora, miado misna lomali. The question is, with the other mitzvahs, let's say Avodah Zarah, or Gilui Arayis, or Eved Menachai, or whatever, why does the Torah, it's not the question, not why does the Torah have to repeat the mitzvah itself. Fine, that can be to tell us details. Why does it have to repeat the loises involved? Let's say, for example, Eved Menachai. The Torah tells us, in Parashas Noach, if the Torah just wants to give us extra details about it, in Parashas Re'eh, it could just say, this dam that I informed you about, this Bosa B'Nafshei that I informed you about, here's another detail about it that applies to you Jewish people. The fact that it says again the mitzvah, lo yisoichal ha-nefesh ima Bosar, why should that be necessary if we already have the Ahara before?
It's not as a detail.
Yeah. Therefore, the answer is it must be that it's telling us that it's actually for both. That once you have two Azharas, it means one is for Bnei Noach and the other is for the Jewish people. But Taka, when you have something like Bris Milah, where the Torah doesn't again say the mitzvah, do not remain an oral, like it does by Brit Mila by Avraham Avinu. It just says, Vayom HaShmini Yimu B'Sarah Lo. So, fine, there we can say it's mentioned again only for a detail. Pruvu, again, it doesn't say explicitly after Matan Torah to go be part of a robber. It just says, Leicham Olehem, Shuvah Lacham Ma'alechem. So we can say that teaches us the din of Dovah Shemini.
When it says, what's the, it's like a new time.
It's like a new, yeah. New. Okay. So fine. Continuing, we said before in the Brayta, Ve'emor al-Gidah Nosha Bovad Ba'alibidid of Yehuda. So we said that the only example that we can find is Gidah Nosha is something that was said before Matan Torah, according to Yehuda, and then not repeated after Matan Torah. So the question is, Hani Nami Lo Yisni. Fine, but what about, for example, the other ones we just mentioned then, in that case, Mila, what do you mean? The only exception we can find is Gidah Nosha. We just said we have other exceptions. We have Mila, we have Piri Verivya. So you have three examples. What do you mean the only one we can find is Gidah Nosha? The answer is fine. Hani Yisni Lo Shum Mil Sava'alma. Fine, but at least they're repeated in some sense. It still says, Vayim HaShmini Yimu B'Sarah Lasa. It still says, Leicham Or Lehem Shuvah Lacham Ba'alechem. Fine, we're saying it's not to teach us the actual mitzvah, it's to teach us the detail about the mitzvah. At least it's mentioned again.
Paul,
one in Leicham Or Lehem and Vayim HaShmini. As opposed to Gidah Nosha, the reason why we're mentioning Gidah Nosha, it's never mentioned at all. There's no place else in the Torah, aside from Parashas Vayishlach, where it ever mentions, again, the concept of the Gidah Nosha being offered. That's what we mean. That's the only example that we can find where it's never repeated at all. And therefore, it's clear that it's meant only for B'nai Yisrael and not B'nai Noach. They are repeated. To add a detail, but at least they're repeated. That's the difference. In other words, so we have three kinds of things. We have three kinds of mitzvahs then. We have one where there's an original azhara to B'nai Noach, don't do this, and then the azhara is repeated again after Matan Torah, for example, Eid Menachai. That, we say, is applicable to both B'nai Noach and Jews. We have the kind where the azhara is said before Matan Torah, and then the mitzvah is said before Matan Torah, like Pruvu, or like Pruvu or Mila, and then it's mentioned later on in the Torah, but not as a new mitzvah saseh or mitzvah loy saseh, but rather as adding a detail, like Vayim HaShmini Yimu B'Sarah Lasa, or Leicham Or Lehem Shuvah Lachem Ba'alechem. That still means that means it's considered that it wasn't repeated. It applies only to Jews, not to Noach. On the other hand, the fact is it is repeated. And then you have Gidah Nosha, which is only mentioned in Vayishlach and never repeated again to give any other detail. That also applies only to Jews and not to Bnei Noach.
And why do we need both? For Jews, when you don't repeat anywhere else.
If you don't repeat, that's what we're saying. The only example that we have of a mitzvah never repeated anywhere else, even to give details, is Gidah Nosha. But yes, we have other ones where it's given again, but not to tell us that it applies to Bnei Noach as well as to Jews, but rather to add details that apply to Jews. Or another possibility, you could answer, Mila mi'ikra la'avram hu dekomazel e'rachmana, because after all, Mila is not addressed l'chatchila to the whole world, it is only l'chatchila addressed to Avram. But after it's briti tishmo, you should keep my brit after v'zaracha acharecha l'veraisa, you and your children after you for their generation, implying after v'zaracha ein inish achrin aloi, implying only you and your descendants, not anybody else. So therefore, taka, it only applies to Jewish people, l'chatchila. The question is, what about Abraham and other descendants? Elamayasa b'nei Yishmol l'chayvu. Shouldn't Yishmol's descendants be chayv? The answer is, ki b'yitzchak, yukhar l'chazara. Fine, the Pasuk says only Yitzchak is considered your seed, your descendants. Yeah. So Yishmol Taka had a bris because the Mepharshim give a couple of reasons. One of them is Taka Avraham had a mitzvah to give a bris milah to everybody in his household, all the males in his household, so of necessity that included Yishmol, but not that Yishmol himself had a mitzvah of bris milah. Had Avraham not given a bris milah to Yishmol for whatever reason, not necessarily would Yishmol have had a mitzvah on his own. Besides that, also, this all happened before the Eibishter tells Avraham, Kibi Yitzchok Yikar L'Chazara. That happened only afterwards. So therefore, by that time, he had already given Yishmol a bris. Okay, the question is, Bnei Esav L'chayru, what about, shouldn't the descendants of Esav be chayv, they're descended from Yitzchak? The answer is, Be Yitzchak means V'loi Kol Yitzchak. The word Be Yitzchak means only within Yitzchak, not all of Yitzchak. So therefore, only Yaakov, not Esav. Esav himself had a bris milah, but again, for the same reason. First of all, it wasn't clear at the time who's going to be the Be Yitzchak. Is it going to be Esav, or is it going to be Yaakov? So, for the same reason, Esav himself had a bris, but it doesn't mean, again, had they not done, and there's a medrash that actually says differently, that they didn't do a bris on him when he was a baby because he was born red, and they figured it's dangerous, as Taka is the din, if a baby is jaundiced or red or whatever, you know. And by the time they realized that it's his natural coloring, he was old enough already that he didn't want to go through with it. Okay, but the but the other midrashim do say that he did actually have a bris milah, and that according to that it would just be they did because at the time they didn't have one. Okay, fine. What about b'nei k'tura lo l'chaim? Maski chorabayshia. Elamayata, by this logic, if you're saying, according to your logic that you just said, that bris milah only applies to the Jewish people, then the b'nei k'tura should not be chayim. Ha'omer Rav Yosi ba'oven, b'tevet Rav Yosi ba'chanina, but, in bris milah, but didn't Rav Yosi ba'oven, or some say Rav Yosi ba'chanina say, when the Pasuk says, that's brisi heisai, when the Pasuk says, the Eivishter says to Avraham, my covenant, a person who doesn't get a bris milah is chayiv kares, as brisi heisai, my bris he has violated, l'rabbis b'nei k'tura, that word comes to be m'chayiv the b'nei k'tura. Now, what do we mean by b'nei k'tura?
We know that.
But we know, the Kabbalah.
Kabbalah,
we know from Torah Shabbat Peh. I misread this. This is a question and an answer. Elamayata b'nei k'tura lo l'chayvu. By that logic, you should say b'nei k'tura should not be chayiv. The answer is no, because ha'omer Rav Yosi ba'oven v'tamer Rav Yosi ba'chanina es brisi heifar l'rabbis b'nei k'tura. Okay, we have a ribui in the pasuk from the word es brisi heifar that b'nei k'tura are chayiv in bris milah. Now, what do we mean by b'nei k'tura? Rashi and many of the other Rishonim say specifically we're talking about the actual six sons who were born to Keturah that I mentioned towards the end of Parashas Chayesara. Only them. We're not talking about their descendants. They themselves had a chiyuv of bris milah. And again, you could argue that maybe they're only chayiv because again Abraham has to give a bris milah to everybody in his household, but not necessarily as a chiyuv on them themselves. So Rashi understands over here the premise of the Gemara's question is, should we say, now after all, B'nai K'tura were born after the Eivishter tells him, Kibi Yitzchak Yikar L'Chazara. So by now it's clear these six are not going to be considered his Zera. Are you going to say then that he didn't give them a bris milah? And the answer is that no, L'Rabbis B'nai K'tura, that no, there is a special ribui that those six are included, that they're chayiv in the mitzvah of bris milah. On the basis of Esbrisi Heifar, on the basis of the Eivishter, it says, anybody who, an oral zohar, who doesn't have a bris, Esbrisi Heifar, he's violated my covenant, that comes to include B'nai K'tura. So Rashi specifically says it means only those six, not their descendants, as opposed to the mitzvah that was given to Avraham, which goes down through the generations, only goes down through the generations through Yitzchak and through Yaakov, only the Jewish people, nobody else.
Not Ishmael.
Not Ishmael, and not Esav, and not B'nai K'tura. Now, the Rambam and the Ran have a different understanding of our Gemara, which is that when the Gemara says L'rabbis B'nai K'tura, actually means the descendants of K'tura are also chayiv in bris milah. This is an exception, even though on the face of it, it should be a mitzvah that applies only to the Jewish people, Ki B'Yitzchok Yikar L'Chazara, but the word, it's brisi heifar, comes to include that B'nai K'tura are chayiv in bris milah as well, meaning they're descendants throughout all the generations.
And so the
Rambam and the Rambam. So the Rambam actually writes like this, that B'nai Yishmael are not chayiv in bris milah, as our Gemara is saying over here. On the other hand, B'nai K'tura are. They're not chayiv Mrs. Beis Din if they don't. So the Rambam says, nowadays, B'nai Yishmael and B'nai K'tura are all mixed up together. They all form the Arabs, so therefore we don't know who's who. Therefore, they're all chayiv in bris milah, but they're not punishable if they don't do it, because we don't know, we can't necessarily prove any particular Arab is a member of B'nai Yishmael versus B'nai K'tura. They can do it, yeah, when they're, yeah. Indeed.
Good.
I guess. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Everlasting bris with B'nai
K'tura. No, he didn't make an everlasting bris with them, but nevertheless, as brisi heifar, they're included in that bris to sort of the famous thing.
The part of our bris?
There's actually an interesting thing that the Zohar says, not about B'nai K'tura, but about Yishmael himself, that the schus of Yishmael himself had, after all, a schus that he underwent a bris at 13. The Zohar says on that, it's because of that that his descendants ended up occupying Eretz Yisrael for so long, and they're going to continue to do that until the schus of that bris milah is used up, and then at that point they'll be kicked out of Eretz Yisrael. The Zohar. Is that because that?
One,
because of one thing. Because of that, yeah. 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 So,
which portion
would
you say
that? I don't know. Probably in Parshas Lech Lecha. I don't know. Okay. Anyway. All right. New topic. Still about Shevet Mitzvah and Noach, but we're now going to get back into the matter of Avraham and Achai. Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav. Adam Arishon lo hutar lo basal achila. Adam Arishon was not permitted to eat meat. The pasuk says in Parashas Bereishis that all the plants in the field shall be for you for food, and also for all the animals of the earth, implying the animals themselves are not to be food for you. But when Bnei Noach came along, he told Lahem, then he was master to them. Me, Shanema, as the Pasuk says in Parshas Noach, Yerek Esav Nasati Lahem Pearl, I've given you everything, meaning the animals, like the grass of the field, like the herbs, the plants of the field.
To
Bnei Noach. Yoch, now, we learned at the very beginning of the sugya, we had Rabbi Yochanan saying that we learned all Shevim and Bnei Noach, including Avim and Achai, from the Pasuk that was said to Adam by Yitzav Hashem Elokim Ala Adam Leimer. So many of the Mepharshim say that Rabbi Yochanan Taka would disagree with Rav over here. He would hold that Tosfos, Rashi and Tosfos discussed it earlier, that, for example, Rashi and Tosfos earlier discussed, not necessarily are they arguing, Rabbi Yochanan might mean that Rabbi Yochanan over there might mean they weren't allowed to shecht animals or kill animals to eat the meat, but they were would be allowed to eat meat from animals that died on their own. This is before Matan Torah, Bnei Noach, yeah. But even now, after Matan Torah, Bnei Noach.
Based on the fact that it says.
So we said over there, right? Tzav Hashem Elokim Ala Adam Leimer. We learned over there. What did we say over there? Which one was Eiv Menachai. You should eat. You can eat the plants or the fruit or whatever, but not Eiv Menachai. So one possibility Rashi and Tosfos discuss over there is that Rabbi Yochanan means they're allowed to eat meat from animals that died on their own. He just means they're not allowed. And Rav is saying over here, but they're not allowed to kill animals for food. Some of the other Mephoroshim, the Yad Ramah, among others, argue with that and say that can't be. The Gemara is just saying a blanket statement they couldn't eat meat. So therefore, they talk about, the Yad Ramah talks about that maybe what it means is the Eibishter is not explicitly saying you can't eat meat. He's saying that you can only eat what I gave you permission. I didn't include meat, so therefore meat is not included, but not that you have an actual issue. It's not like it's trade for you, just that it's off limits because I haven't been master it for you. It's like when you have a guest in your house, only whatever you give him is what he can eat. He can't just take on his own. So therefore, we have to specify Eiv Menachai is actually also to them. Eiv Menachai would be an actual. In other words, if Adam had eaten according to the Yad Ramah, if Adam had eaten meat, they wouldn't be chayiv misa. They'd be violating something that Eivisha said, but they wouldn't be chayiv misa. But if they ate Eiv Menachai, then they'd be chayiv misa. With all that said, the Rambam takes a different view of it. The Rambam says that actually only six of the mitzvahs were given to Adam, and then the seventh, Eiv Menachai, was given to Noah. So he apparently understands that it taka means there was a blanket iser on meat from Adam until Noah, and therefore taka there was no reason for a mitzvah of Eiv Menachai beforehand because you can't eat meat anyway. Okay. Yochel lo yeh. Because there was that we're saying over here I mentioned the other day of verse that I think that Ramban says that all the animals owed their lives to Noach for saving them in the marble and for saving them in the teva, and therefore yeah. Yochel lo yeh Eiv Menachai Noach. Well, fine. You would think once animals are mutter to Bnei Noach, maybe Eiv Menachai shouldn't apply to them either. No, Talmud Lomer. That is why the pasuk says Achbasa Benafshe Doma Lo Sechelu meat. That has its life in its blood, you should not eat. Yochel ach the shrut. Then you
wanted to say that it shouldn't apply to Bnei Noach.
Then it wouldn't have said that. Then it wouldn't have said that pasuk. That pasuk is telling us Eiv Menachai.
Which condition means Eiv Menachai?
Eiv Menachai means from a living animal, right? If they're allowed to eat meat, maybe. What about Yochel ach the shrutim? You would think that maybe the issue of Eiv Menachai even applies to shrutim. Talmud Lomer ach. So therefore, the pasuk says ach. And ach is a meal.
Excluding
shrotim. So the question is, my Talmud, how exactly do we see that ach excludes shrotim? Maybe it means behemoth chaya are excluded. The answer is Amar Rav Huna, domoi, because the pasuk mentions the word blood. It didn't have to say the word blood. According to Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, fine, it did, because he says they have an iser of dam min achai. But according to the Chachamim, who don't hold of that, so what is the word domoi doing there over there in the pasuk? But the benapshe, let's say, hey, the blood, the flesh that has its life force in it, you shouldn't eat. What's domoi? It means misha domoi cholok mibsore. It means the rule of Eiv Menachai only applies to creatures where the blood has a different status than the meat, namely animals. By a Jew, if a yid is also to eat blood from domestic or wild animals, and if a person does, he's chayiv karis. As opposed to shrotim, there is an isser to shrotim. It's an isser lav, it's a chiyuv malchus, but there's no separate isser for blood of shrotim. A person were to eat a blood of a sheret, it's just if he eats enough that it would be that a kezias or whatever, the regular amount, that it would be that he'd be also by a sheret, then he gets malchus for that. But there's no separate isser of dam by a sheret. So misha domei cholak m'sari, it only applies to animals where the dam and the basar have a different status in halacha. Yotu shrotim shein domei cholak m'sarim, as opposed to shrotim, where the blood, it's not that it can't be separated, the blood doesn't is not considered to have a separate status in halacha from the flesh. From the flesh. Another point of it is also, let's say, for example, you have, let's say, a nevela or a behemoth tmeya or whatever. If a yid were to, for example, eat half a kezias of a behemoth tmeya and a half a kezias of its blood, he wouldn't be chayav karis because the two things don't combine together. But if, let's say, he ate a half a kezias of a sheret and a half a kezias of its blood, he would be chayav malchus for it because it's considered all one thing. Yeah. So therefore, from this from the ach and from the fact that the first pasuk mentions the word domoi, we learn that the concept of avim and achai does not apply to shrotim. So therefore, a goy would be allowed to eat avim and achai from shrotim. Okay. Fine. The Gemara says meitzvi. I have a contradiction to the idea that we said a few lines ago that Adam was also to eat meat. The pasuk says or drubid gasayam. The pasuk says that you should dominate, you should rule over the fish of the sea. This is said to Adam Rishon. My lav la'achil, that means you'll rule over them in the sense that you can eat them. The answer is loy l'malacha. No, it means that you can do work with them. The dog in the name of malacha to do. What do you mean? How do you do malacha? Nevertheless, though, we still the fact is that the besar dogim, fine. As far as dinim of nedarim, fine. Fish is not considered meat because in regular the nedarim halacha halosh of ne'adam and halosh of ne'adam, fish
even
is not considered
chicken
meat.
Also, but chicken, right?
Yeah, no, chicken is a different matter. But it still is considered besar dogim. It still is flesh of fish. If the pasuk is saying he's also to eat flesh, that implies fish also. So the answer is that no, he's allowed to do work with them. The question of a dog and a malach, and they know how do you do work with fish? The answer is ain. Yes, you could have to do rachva, like the case that rachva mentioned, the boy rachva, namely rachva asked the question in Bava Kama, hinig v'iziv shibut amai. What would be the din with a yid we're talking about, where a yid is not allowed to have two different kinds of animals do work together, like sachrish b'shorda b'chamor yachta, you're not allowed to have an ox or a donkey, and a donkey pull a plow or whatever together. What if you were to pull a wagon using a goat and a shibuta? A goat is a land creature. A shibuta is a sea, is a fish. It's a fish of some kind. It's a fish of some kind. So you tie two ropes to the wagon. One of them you tie to the goat. The other one you tie to the fish. And they schlep it along. It could be a big fish. You know, you have like these gigantic tunas or whatever that are capable of pulling. Are you chayev malchus? Is it considered kilayev or not? Because the goat can't go in the water and the shibuta can't come on land.
It's not too
late. So we see that the Gemara leaves it. It's a tzarachiyun over there. The Gemara leaves it as a tefu. But the point still remains that it is conceivable to do malacha with fish. You could harness a fish and then do work with it. So that's what it means. Okay, so there you go.
But dolphin, it's...
Dolphins are not. Halacha doesn't care about how the animal breathes or whatever. The biology of the animal,
whether
halacha just cares where it lives. If it lives in the water, it's called a fish. If it flies in the air, it's called a bird. In the list of birds, in the Torah, for example, the list of Torah birds, the last one on the list is Atalif, which is a bat. Bats aren't birds, they're mammals. But they fly, and therefore the Torah puts them in the category of... Yeah. Okay. Onward. Toshma, Oifa Shemayim. What about, let's see, the pasuk continues, the Eibishter tells Adam that you will dominate the birds of the heavens. Again, my lav lachil, that means you have control over them, that you can eat them. The answer is loy l'malacha. Again, it means that you can do work with them. Again, the question of Oifas Menei Malacha, how do you get birds to do work for you? The answer is ain. Kidboi Rabba Barapona. For example, we have the question that Rabba Barapona asked. We learned back in Bava Metzia the concept of chasima, that you're not allowed to muzzle an animal while it's working, while threshing the grain or whatever.
See?
And now we have the opinion of Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, who said over there that the din only applies if an animal is doing work with its hands and feet, meaning with its four legs and hind legs, like a shur. So therefore, the question is, Dosh Ba'abz and Vatana Gerlin, Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, my. According to Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, if you were threshing grain using geese or chickens, where they only do the work with their feet, they don't use their wings to do the work, according to Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, if you were to muzzle them while they do it, so they don't eat from it, would that be allowed? because according to him, because according to you need feet and hands. On the other hand, you could argue maybe not. You could argue that with an animal that goes on all four, you need all four. With a creature that goes only on two, like birds, maybe Taka, if it does with two, it's enough. The point is, you see, it is possible to do work with birds. It's possible to have birds thresh your grain. What about the same passage continues that the Eibishter says to Adam that you will rule over, you will dominate all the creatures that creep on the ground, meaning lechora things like insects and worms and whatever, those you can't do any useful work with. The answer is Ahu Lasu in Nachashu Dasa. That passage comes to teach us that Adam is able to do work with the Nachash. He's able to have the snake do work for him.
Well,
D'tanya, as we learn in the Brayse, Rav Shimon ben Menachya, Chaval al shamash gadol sha'avad min ha'olam. It's a pity about the great useful servant that was lost from the world after the chet etadah. Yeah, the snake. She'omolei leniskal al nachash, because had the snake not been cursed, kol echad ve'echad meYisrael hayu mezamnen l'shnei nachashim tovim, then every Jew would have two good snakes to meet up with him and accompany him. Echad meshagri l'tzofen ve'echad meshagri l'dorim. The Yid would be able to send these two snakes out on missions, one to the north and one to the south. L'havi leistan malbonim tovim, to bring him good precious stones. Ba'avonim tovim magolias, and other jewels and other jewels and pearls. And not only that, but the snake would be able to sling a strip of skin under its tail, and with that the snake would be able to schlep dirt that you could use to be able to put into your garden or into your house rune or whatever. He'd be able to transport dirt from one place to another. Marsha says on this, the point is, how does the Gemara know the snake was capable of these things? Because since we see the snake was cursed, you should go on your stomach and you should eat dirt. And we see before that the snake was intelligent, so we understand from that what the snake was before that. It had intelligence. The person could have sent it out on missions. It had the ability, instead of eating dirt, to be able to carry dirt for useful purposes for you. It would carry. That's what we're saying. It would have like a pouch, like a strip of skin, kind of like a pouch under its tail that it could carry dirt in.
Wanted the
marichavel,
must have had some ability to.
Yeah, it was a smart creature. That's the point. So we see therefore that yes, before the chet etadah, Adam is able to dominate and do and have work done with the creatures that crawl on the ground, not to eat them, but to have them do work for him, namely the nachash. Maybe you must have another contradiction to this idea that you're saying that Adam was not allowed to eat meat. Hoyer of Yehuda ben Tema, Emir of Yehuda ben Tema used to say, Odomarishan Mesiv Gan Eden Hoyer. Odomarishan was reclining in Gan Eden, like a person comfortably by a meal before the Chet Etadah. Bahoyer Malacha Asharis Toilin Leg Bot. So the Malacha Asharis were roasting meat for him. So there you go, meat. Omasanin Lo Yayin, and they were straining wine for him. Hits it by Nachash. The Nachash took a look at this. He saw the honor, the glory that Adam has in Iskanabo, and he got jealous of him. And that's why he went and tempted Chava. So the point is, we see Adam was eating meat. Now, here's where the Ran points out. If you go according to the opinion of Rashi and Tosfos that Adam was allowed to eat meat from animals that died on their own, then what's the Gemara's question? The Gemara could answer that it's that. The answer is that it's not to cover dick to say that they're serving him a fancy meal and they're going to use roadkill. They're going to use animals that died on their own. So it must be l'chora that they're using meat from animals that were properly killed.
Shefted.
Not necessarily shefted, as before Mount Torah, but at least killed for human use. As opposed to, according to the Ran himself, and according to the Rambam, and according to, not the Ran, according to the Yad Ramah, and according to the Rambam, that they taka were not allowed to eat meat at all, then the Gemara's question makes a lot of sense. No, it makes my case. The Gemara's question makes a lot of sense. They weren't even allowed to eat meat from animals that died on their own. So how do they come to have meat? That's the question. The answer is, meat that we're talking about is not meat from animals here on earth. It's meat that fell down from Shemayim. Question, where is there such a thing, meat that falls down from heaven? The answer is, the slav were birds that were brought in on a wind. They flew in with the wind. They didn't fall down from Shemayim like a mon. Right? But the slav again is natural birds that existed on earth, and they were blown in by a wind. It's not falling down from Shemayim. It's not the same thing. Then there is Ain. Yes, there is a thing. Here it's falling down. Tihad Rav Shimon Chalakta have a Ka'azal Baruch, as we have the example that one time Rav Shimon Chalakta was walking on the road, he all of a sudden ran into two lions who were roaring at him. Omar, so he says a pasuk, Akfirim Shayagam Latarif, the young lions are roaring for their food. In other words, the point, so some Arsha and some other Mepharshim talk about it, he's not saying in so many words, please save me from these lions, but he's saying evidently the lions are hungry, so therefore the Eivishta have to provide, and by rights, they wouldn't want to eat me, Elamai, if they don't have anything else then they're going to, so therefore something has to be provided. Nechisulay tauti atmasa, two thighs of meat fell down for him from Shemayim. Chada achlua, one of them the lions ate, for chada shakua, the other one they left behind for him to eat. Marsha says, because the point is, the pasuk says, "Hakfirim shayegam latarif." The whole pasuk goes, "Hakfirim shayegam latarif." The young lions roar for their food. Ulavakish mekel ochlam, and because they beg the Eidishter for their food. Their food implies not only the kfirim, but also the potential tariff, also the potential victim, namely himself, also needs food from the Eidishter. So therefore, the Eidishter sent down food for them and for him. I say va'asva also the Beit Medrash. So he took this second piece of meat and brought it to the Beit Medrash, boyala, and he asked them. Dava Tomei, who was there, Dava Tahar. Is this Tomei or Tahar? Am I allowed to eat it?
From Shemayim.
Amrulay, and they answered him, famous expression, Ein Dava Tomei Yerim Min HaShemayim. Nothing Tomei ever falls down from Shemayim. Yes, this is kosher to meat, and you're allowed to eat it.
What was that?
What?
It wasn't kosher.
No, it doesn't matter. It's the Dava Tahar. So therefore, it's the same kind of thing. There was Basra Yerim Min HaShemayim, that the Malachim could serve all that.
So therefore that excludes
animals here on earth. Yeah. Okay. So in this connection of Zera after Rabbahu, what if something looking like a donkey falls down from Shemayim? Is that going to be mutter? Yeah. On the face of it, it should be definitely a Dover Tomei. Omalei, Rabbahu says to him like in a very dismissive expression, Yorud Nola, you silly Yorud. A yorud, Rashi explains, is a bird that always has a crying sound, that always like makes a noise like crying, I guess like some kind of owl or something. You silly yorud. I'll tell you in a second why is Rabbi Bohu calling him such a name, but let's first finish. Ha'amile, ein dover tome yorud nashamayim. They told him, ein dover tome yorud nashamayim. So either it's impossible that it should happen, that a chamor comes down, or if it does, it will be tome. It looks like a chamor, doesn't matter. Now, why is he calling him yorud nola? So the Chavis Yorud has it.
What does it mean, Yorud?
Yorud, I just said. I mean, Nola means silly, and Yorud is a kind of bird that's always crying. So the Chavis Yorud has a very interesting tshuva where he deals with, you know, we learn, as we learn through the Gemara, we come across a lot of times where we have the Chachamim use sharp expressions against each other, insulting expressions or whatever. So the Chavis Yorud has one of his tshuva, in one of his tshuvas, he discusses all this, what's going on over here. He says, and he explains a lot of them. He explains this one like this. Rashi is saying that this Yorud is a bird that was always making a crying sound. Reb Zera, we find in various places in the Gemara, he was fasting a lot, he was always serious. Yeah, for example, we know the fact that he fasted to forget Talmud Bavli, to learn Talmud Yerushalmi. There's a Gemara, I think, in Nida, that he was always so serious that one time Reb Yumiya tried to get him to laugh by asking him a ridiculous question, an impossible situation in Halakha, and he still wouldn't laugh because he held, you know, to laugh in Elam Hazah. So therefore, Rabbi Bohu is telling them, you're acting like a Yorud. And therefore you're silly, therefore you're not understanding the verse because you're too umatic, you're too depressed, you're too serious. If you were to be the simcha like a yid is supposed to be, then you would be able to understand on your own that when they said Ein Dover Tomei Yerim Min HaShemayim, then they meant that.
Why was he so serious?
Because that's what he held. He held. That's also the Adam Shema with Adam Pips, Khoik Boy Lamazel. That a person is not filled his mouth with laughter in Adam Hazza, only lost his lover. Okay. All right. Reb Shimon, now finally we're getting back to something that we said at the very beginning of the sugya. We had the different opinions of what exactly is also to Bnei Noach and what is not. So we've gone through the Sheva Mitzvahs. And then we had over there, Reb Shimon and Ma'achala Kishur. Reb Shimon said that Bnei Noach are also to do Kishur. My time is Reb Shimon. What's Reb Shimon's reason? Where did he get that from? Dichtiv, because the Pasuk says, Machshefa lo Yitzchaya. The Pasuk says in Parshas Mishpatim, a Machshefa, somebody who practices Kishur, you should not allow to live. And then the next pasuk continues, called Sheichim and Behemah Mois Yumas. Anybody who lies with an animal is to be put to death, implying that smichos, that hekesh teaches us, therefore, kol sheyeshne b'chal sheichem, kol sheichem and behema, yeshne b'chal machsheif alezachaya. Anybody who is included under the din of kol sheichem and behema, which therefore includes goyim, because we established before that goyim are also to have relations with animals, then Reb Shimon says that we learn from that hekesh, they're also also in kishuv. They're also punishable for kishuv. Yeah, because we said before that we said that the pasuk v'davak v'ishtei v'hoyu l'baser echad v'hoyu l'baser echad means not animals, because a man and a person and an animal can't become baser echad. They can't have children.
But not only the Eden, the goyim.
Yes, right. That's what we're saying. Goyim as well. Okay. Then we said Rabbi Eliezer I'm afal kilayim. Rabbi Eliezer said that also goyim are also to do kilayim. Menahani mili. So where do we know this from? Because the pasuk says that's the pasuk says in Parshas Kedoshim. Now this part taka is addressed to the Jewish people, but so it's after Matan Torah. But it starts off when it starts introducing the dinim of kilayim. It starts off with the words es chukosai tishmaru, my chukim you should keep. Now you don't usually have that kind of introduction to other mitzvahs. So what does it mean? It means chukim shchakti l'chokvar. It means these are laws that I've already established for you from before for bnei noach. You, as Jews, have to continue keeping them. Namely, behemda. That's because shochachakti v'chokvar, that I already established.
That's the interpretation.
Yes,
but
that's what we're saying. And we continue, behemda cholot sabiyah kilayim v'sod cholot kilayim. The pasuk continues, you animals, you should not cross breed as kilayim. You field, you should not plant kilayim. So, first of all, what does it mean to not plant your field with kilayim? Now, we know for Jews, there's a lot of things that are included in it. No, we know that for Jews, there are at least five or six different things that are included in kilayim. You're not allowed to crossbreed animals. You're not allowed to have animals pull a wagon or whatever together or do work together, as we discussed before. You're not allowed to plant different kinds of seeds together. You're not allowed to plant grain or vegetables or whatever in a vineyard. You're not allowed to cross graft different kinds of trees. And you're not allowed to wear kilayim. You're not allowed to wear shatnez. So which ones are we saying are included for bnei noach? Since the pasuk starts by mentioning you animals, you should not crossbreed kilayim, and your field, you should not plant kilayim. It means ma behemdecha b'harba afsarcha b'harkava. First of all, it means just like with animals, the thing that this pasuk is saying is aser is actually crossbreeding them, not having them pull a wagon together. That's in a different pasuk. Therefore, sadcha, when it says your field, must mean b'harkava. It's talking about not planting. It's not talking about planting different kinds of seeds or whatever together. Rather, it's talking about something where you're doing something involving the goof of the thing. Just like with the animals, you're doing something involving the goof of the thing, crossbreeding them, crossmating them. So also with sadcha, it has to mean where you're taking a branch from one tree and grafting it into another. So that would be the only thing. And ma behem tochavein ba'aretz ben b'chotzlar. It's just like the crossbreeding animals is also both in and out of Eretz Yisrael, because it has nothing to do with the land, and mitzvahs that have nothing to do with the land apply everywhere in the world. Sadcha ben ba'aretz ben b'chotzlar. It's the same thing. The sadcha that we're saying not allowed to cross graft trees would apply both in Eretz Yisrael and in chotzlar.
Why shatnez won't be included?
So why shatnez is not included? Tosfos starts by discussing that over here, because yes, shatnez is in the end of that pasuk. We're going to climb shatnez layavah. So Tosfos says the main thing is that we're saying chukim shakachakim l'chakvar refers back to when in Parashas Bereishis, when the Torah says that the Eibishter created the grasses and the trees and the animals liminehu according to their own species.
That's
the point. Shatnez is mentioned, so therefore shatnez is not included. The Yad Ramah gives a different answer. The Yad Ramah says that since the pasuk says es chukosai my chukim in the plural. Miut rabim shnayim. So therefore, it means the first two things that I mentioned in the pasuk, namely behemtacha and sarcha. Kilayim is already the third thing in the pasuk. I mean, shatnez is already the third thing in the pasuk. Therefore, it's not included for bnei noach.
Chukosai means
my chukim. Yeah. Chukim means a minimum of two.
Right.
So therefore, it means only two out of the three apply to bnei noach.
Why could mean all the?
Because then the pasuk would have had to say it's kol chukosai or something, whatever. Okay. That's according to the Yad Ramah. So the question is, Elamayata, by that logic, if you're going to say that whenever the Torah says, keep my chukim, it means chukim that already exists from before. What about, the pasuk says, Shmartim es chukosev es mishpatai? What about the Torah says, you should keep my chukim and my mishpatim, which is a general thing about the whole Torah? Are you going to say, also chukim shakachakti l'chokvar? Are you also going to say it means the chukim that I established for you from before? What, are you going to have to keep all the mitzvahs? No. The answer is Hotam Ushmar. It's in Parshas Akrim, right? It's right before the Parshas of Araya. That's the question. The answer is Hotam Ushmar to Meshukoyse to Hashta. No, because over there it's saying you should keep my chukim, implying the chukim that I'm establishing now. Because first it mentions the word chukim, and then it says Shmira. So chukim that the It says the word shmira before chukim. So you should keep the new chukim that I'm giving you now. As opposed to hochas, chukoyse deshmeru, as opposed to in the other pasuk by kilayim, it starts with the word chukoyse, and then it says deshmeru you should keep, implying chukim de meikra deshmeru, meaning the chukim that already have existed from beforehand are the ones that you have to keep, that you Jews have to keep, but they also apply to Bnei Noach. As opposed to here, where it first says shmartem, you should keep. What are you going to keep? New chukim that I'm giving you now, namely the rest of the Torah. Now, the actual halacha is that Amnam writes, that the Rambam writes in Hilchos Malachim, so we'll be getting into it in Rambam soon, that in both Perek Echad and Shlosha Perakim, because we're almost finished, it's true the Goyim technically only have seven mitzvahs, and those are the ones. Nevertheless, Mipia Kabbalah, they're also to do Kilayim of the types that we just described, and they're also to do Kilayim of the types that we just described. The Mipia Kabbalah, it's the same thing. We have to teach them just like we have to teach them the other Shemitz. They're not Chayav Mitzvah if they don't. So therefore, they're not considered among the Shemitz if they have. But they're still also to do it.
Also,
we learned earlier, we had an opinion that said that Sirus. Yeah, so the same thing. Sirus is castration, castrating an animal or whatever. Yeah, so the person. It's also to them. It's also to them in Pia Kabbalah. We have, as part of Torah Shabbat, that it's also to them. They're not Chayav Mitzvah, therefore, it's not considered among the Shemitz. Apparently, yeah. But only these two types of kilayim. They're not allowed to crossbreed animals, and they're not allowed to cross graft trees. Anything else? All the other four things. They're allowed to mix seeds. They're allowed to plant grain near grapevines. They're allowed to have an ox and a donkey or whatever pull a plow or whatever together, and they're allowed to wear shackles because those aren't included yet. Just to finish off, by the way, so here we finish with the thing of Sheva Mitzvot Menayach, just to mention briefly. So we see from all of this, therefore, so we have the general concept of Sheva Mitzvot. We say now that there are a couple of other things that are also to them as well, even though they're not counted among the seven. And then we discussed the other day that various Rishonim talk about,
again?
We just said Sirus and Kalai. And possibly Kishu. So we said, and we also talked about the other day that there are various other things that, technically, according to many Rishonim, they are Chayavin, but again, they're not considered among the Sheva Mitzvot, for example, Tzedakah, some say Kibud Av Ve'Em, etc. There's a Gemara in Chulin that uses the expression that the Goyim have 30 mitzvahs.
30.
And Rishonim, I think, beginning from the Sadia Goyim, explain on the basis of that what it means is you have general seven. Then once you start getting into all the Pratim and all these various other things that maybe are not considered among the seven, but nevertheless they're Chayavin in one way or another, all together you come out with 30.
What did we say about Kibud Avaim?
We didn't mention Kibud Avaim before, but there are opinions that they're chayiv in it. At least, maybe not as a mitzvah, but at least as a basic thing of as a basic thing of decency. So maybe then they're
Where do they derive that from?
From the fact that the common sense that your parents brought you into the world, and therefore you owe them respect. So there's sort of that idea. Again, there's maybe tzedakah, there's a few others.
So let's say that they say, okay, I'll do these mitzvahs, but not because it says in the Torah or Moshe.
So that's fine. The only ones they have to keep because it says in the Torah to be considered a chassid or mosalim are the Sheva mitzvahs. All the other ones, they want to give tzedakah, let's say, because it's logical, or kedeli is yarevah, like it says in Perek Aleph or Tanya, or whatever, fine, let them do that.
It's not a mitzvah.
The Rambam says, as a general rule, if a goy wants to keep any of the other mitzvahs, with the exceptions that we said before, like Shabbos, the Rambam says, if a goy wants to keep another mitzvah, fine, gizun tehet, let him. He wants to daven, for example, let him. There's a couple of exceptions besides Shabbos. We don't allow him to put on talis or tefillin, for example. As long as they're not doing it as like they're creating a new religion for themselves, when Jews are in power and can enforce the Sheva Mitzvot, we don't allow them to create new religious ceremonies and whatever of their own. They have the Sheva Mitzvot, they can do other optional mitzvahs like on their own. For example, let's say they can bring karbonos or whatever, but they can't start making up new. I mentioned the other day, goyim are even allowed to bring karbonos nowadays.
But karbonos are in the Jewish way, or they're
They can set up a something in their backyard or whatever, and shecht an animal. I don't even know if they have to shecht it technically, whatever, and offer it to Hashem. Yeah, they're allowed to do that. The halacha is, even a yid is allowed to be involved in teaching them the right way to do it. A yid is not allowed to be involved in chefing it, of course, or whatever, that would be also, but a yid is allowed to be, the Gemara tells us in Zvachim, we'll learn in a year and a half, as the Shem or so, that Shabra Malka once sent or Shabra Malka's mother, I think it was, whatever, sent a korban to Rava, and Rava, and then Rava got two Goyish boys to act as priests to bring it to the korban, yeah? Okay. Let's continue in our Gemara a little bit. Going back now that we finished with the digression in the Sheva Mitzvot Neinoyach, now we're going back to what our Mishnah had talked about the dinim of Megadif, the dinim about a person curses the Eivishter where he's Chayiv Mitzvah. That's how we got into it, because we mentioned that a Goy, that's one of the Sheva Mitzvot Neinoyach, that a Goy is also to curse the Eivishter also, and that led us into the whole discussion of Sheva Mitzvot Neinoyach over the last four blocks. So now to continue, Amar Rabbi Shrub and Karcha Chola, we said Rabbi Shrub and Karcha says that when they interrogate the Edim, they don't have the Edim actually say out explicitly what the guy said, how the guy blasts from the Eivishter. Instead, they have him use the expression Yaka Yoisi et Yoisi, let Yoisi hit Yoisi, where Yoisi represents the name of, stands in for the name of the Eivishter. Because, as we learned at the beginning of the Gemara over there, to be higher for Birkas Hashem, a person has to curse one name of the Eivishter using another one. For example, this name should hit that one, or this name should curse that one, or whatever.
Where did we see that from?
Well, we learned that from V'nokiv Shem Hashem. V'nokiv Shem Hashem, we said over there. According to the Rambam, it means Davka, it means the name, well, we're going to see in our Gemara over here, Shem Ben Avoyti. The Rambam said, the our Gemara is going to say the name Yud Kei Vavdi. The Rambam says it also includes the name Adnai. Some of the Rishonim talk about, now remember, you have two different names involved over here. You have, let's say, the doer, and you have the one that's done to. Yaka Yoisi es Yoisi, let's say, you know, yeah, the first Yoisi is the subject of the sentence, the other one is the object. When we say that it's Yudke Volke, or according to the Rambam, also Adnai, does that mean for both of them, or does it mean the doer, the subject of the sentence has to be Adnai or Yudke Volke? The object could be also Elikim or Shakai or whatever. Or maybe not. Maybe it has to be the subject and the object. Okay. So Amar Abacha by Yaakov, Eine Chayev Ad Shivorach Shem Ben Arba Oisis. A person is only Chayev if he blesses, which is again a euphemism for cursing, the name of Hashem of four letters, Yudkei Vavkei. Meaning, well, first of all, Rashi says it means we don't say that it has to be the name of 42 letters, namely the name that's the initials from Anam B'Kayach. We don't say it has to be that one. Four letters is enough. Yeah.
Because Hashem has 42 letters.
What? As opposed to, if he were to curse the name of Hashem of two letters, the name Yud Kei, then he wouldn't be Chayav.
Okay.
Also not.
No,
because Vav Kei for sure is not a name. There's no question in that. But the point is, again, if he were to say that, let's say, for example, Yud Kei should hit Yud Kei Vav Kei, he wouldn't be Chayav. If you were to say the other way around, Yud Kei Vav Kei should hit Yud Kei, then you have the machlokas over there whether the object of the sentence has to be Yud Kei Vav Kei. So, okay. So the Gemara says that Pshita, Yaka Yoisi Yoisi Yoisi. Now, and of course, the Mishnah mentioned Yoisi Yoisi Yoisi, meaning the same name both times. And again, we said over there, Yoisi is the reason why the Mishnah uses the name Yoisi, because it has a four letters just like the name Yud Kei Vav Kei. It's the gematria of the word Elikim. It also has two Yuds in it. So the answer is Ma'u detema milsa ba'al mahudinaka. You could say, okay, maybe Rabbi Shulben Torcha picked a name at random, but he didn't doubt to mean that it has to be the Shem ben Arba. Maybe he meant the Shem ben Shtaim at Udolta. Kamash Malon, that is the Chiddush, that no, if he does the Shem ben Shtaim, he's not Chayim. Ikadamri, another version of this discussion, Amar Abach Vayakov, Shmamina, from this discussion we see Shem ben Arba Oisias Nami Shem. We see from this discussion that the name of Hashem, a four letter, the name Yudke Vavke, is also considered for this purpose a name of Hashem. You shouldn't think that it has to be Davka the name of 42 letters, like a bigger name of Hashem, so to speak. The question is, Pshita, Yaka Yoisi Yes Yoisi. So now, of course, the Mishnah mentioned Yoisi, and Yoisi has four letters. Again, Ma'od Tema, you would think, Adi Ika Shem Rabba, maybe though still the Chiyuv is only if he does a greater name, like the name of 42. And just he mentioned, he used the name Yoisi, but he didn't mean it only to represent the name Yudkei Vavkei. He meant it to represent a greater name, like the name of 42. Kamash Malon, that's the Chiddush, that no, that it applies if he were to do the name of 4, the name of Yudkei Vavkei, and according to the Rambam, also the name Adnai.
What did they stop using Shem Hashem to come and go?
Sometime during the time of the second Mishnah.
The
Shem and Poder, Shem.
That's not the 4, that's not Yudkei Vavkei.
That is Yudkei Vavkei, with its proper pronunciation.
All right.
Yeah.
when we're talking in the Mishnah, these people obviously after the
not necessarily. First of all, not necessarily. No, of course not. No, we're talking about chiyuv mitzvah. It has to be while the mitzvah is still standing. But besides that, also, I don't know that it has to be necessarily that the person could be chayev with gavka to pronounce and then yurkei vavkei with its proper nekudas. Let's say he would have pronounced it with the nekudas as it's printed in the chumashim or whatever. L'chora, he would also be chayev. Sometimes, yeah. Well, Shemam Yuchad. Yeah. That's the Gemara is going to mention the next thing. Shemam Furish. Sometimes Shemam Furish. Sometimes we use the name Shemam Furish to mean the name 42 or the name of 72 letters or whatever. But in all of Gemara, as we'll see in the next piece of Gemara, we're going to see the name Shemam, the word Shemam Furish refers to the name of Furish. Yeah. So we said Nigmar Adin. We said once it's time for the Gemara Adin, then we bring the Adim in and they have to actually say explicitly what the guy said. Or what the guy said. So, and the Mishnah says that the Dayanim stand up. Where do we know they have to stand up? Because you have a pasuk like this. The pasuk describes how Ehud comes to Eglon, the king of Moab, who had been oppressing the Jewish people for 18 years.
We make an Edus always standing.
No, the Edim have to be standing. The Dayanim were saying, when the Edim are about to say, this guy said, Yaka Yoisi, the Dayanim we're talking about. How do we know the Dayanim have to stand when they hear the guy say, Yaka Yudke Volke, S, whatever, how do we know that they have to stand for that? So you have like this. You have the pasuk described in Parshas Shoftim that Ehud comes to Eglon Melech Moav, who had been oppressing the Jewish people for 18 years, and he comes to assassinate him, but he comes by himself. The Ehud Bo'elov, Ehud comes to him. He, Eglon, was sitting in the upper cool room of his palace.
Ehud comes to kill him?
He didn't know. Eglon didn't know that. But Ehud had a sword strapped to his left thigh. Ehud was a lefty, so like this is when Ehud... Because that's the point. Ehud was a lefty, so therefore he had it strapped to his right leg, and nobody thought to search his right leg because most people are righties. So he comes. What? It was a small one, also. Yeah. So he comes to this Eglon, and Eglon is sitting by Elias Hamakera in the cool upper chamber. Ashaloi, that is his name, Levada. He's sitting by himself. By Yomer Ehud, and Ehud says, "Dvar Elikim Lielecha." He says, "I have a word from Elikim to you." By Yochem Alakise, and Eglon gets up from his throne, and then Ehud pulls out his sword and stabs him. By the way, you have the famous thing that is a schus, the Eglon Forge had a schus that he got up in honor of Hashem, and therefore he had the schus that Rus was his descendant.
Because he stood up?
Yeah. Okay. So, v'haloi dvorim kavachoyim. Now, we should make a kavachoyim. He was a good. So let's make a kavachoyim. Ma Eglon Melech Moav shu nochri. Ma dach Eglon Melech Moav was a goy. V'lo yoda el of a kinui. And he only knows of a kinui. He doesn't know the name Yud Kevavke. Ehud comes to him and says the name Elikim. Omad. And he still stood up out of respect for the Eishter. Yisrael, the shame of a Furish. If a Yid is hearing the shame of a Furish, meaning the shame Ben Arba, the shame Yud Kevavke, Allah has kama v'kama. How much more so that he should have to stand? Okay, what about... Kurdan Menolam.
Any example we have?
That's an example. Okay, so Kurt and Manolan will leave for tomorrow, actually.
But there was no Aegis there.
No, but it's not Aegis. The point is, we see from that when you hear somebody saying the name of Aegis, you have to stand up out of respect. If Eglon, a goy, did it for the name of a Kim, then for sure a Yid has to do it for the name of your Tevah.